Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're starting by talking with you about ageism. It's a problem many people face. And today we'll talk about how you can reduce ageism in your life. And we have a couple of guests for you today. Two advocates for senior citizens. Ann Elbert, with me in the studio, Executive Director of Age Better Incorporated, based in Madison. Ann Elbert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry.
It's great to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. With us by phone, Dr. Regina Kapp, a clinical geropsychologist and the founder and director of the Center for Mental Health and Aging, based in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Kapp, welcome to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me and addressing this topic.
Well, it's an important topic. And as you listen into the show, listeners, you can join the conversation. Have you been maybe subjected to ageism? If so, how'd you deal with it? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Let's talk@WPR.org. You know, Dr. Kapp, it might be worth it to start with a definition of ageism.
Yes, I agree. It is so helpful to know what we're talking about. So ageism are stereotypes, which is how we think, prejudice, which is how we feel, and discrimination, which is how we act toward ourselves or others based on their age or the age we perceive them to be. And it disproportionately affects older people.
Yeah. And is it usually obvious when it occurs?
Not always. Sometimes it can be really subtle. And it can show up in a lot of different ways. It can show up when you... something as simple as going to a restaurant or attending a group activity, something like that. It can show up in very different ways. I've had friends tell me that when they go and attend a group activity, sometimes they feel that as they get older that they're invisible. That's is something a little more subtle, but maybe questions aren't asked of them or they're not being engaged. Other people are not engaging.
And Dr. Kapp, certainly ageism has consequences. How does ageism limit, let's say, the contributions of older people in the workplace? And in science, in society generally.
Yeah, well, ageism has far-reaching consequences. The more negative stereotypes we have about growing older, the more likely we are to have physical health problems like cardiovascular disease, dementia disorders, mental health problems like depression, anxiety. And the more positive beliefs we have about aging, the more likely we are to live a longer and healthier life. There was one study that showed that people who have a positive belief about aging are more likely to live 7.5 years longer than adults who have negative views of aging. And so, like Anne was talking about, ageism can play out in terms of who's invited into conversations, who's invited to social gatherings, even into what we believe about what's possible as we age. So a common stereotype is that older adults are set in their ways and are impervious to change. Why would they change after all this time? And actually, that's not true. But if we believe that is true, then we won't be inviting older adults into conversations. And we won't be, if we see, for myself as a psychologist, if we see mental health problems arise in older adulthood and we believe that older adults won't change, we're less likely to encourage them to seek mental health or physical health care for really important concerns that can be treated. And so it has severe consequences all throughout older adulthood, but it's far-reaching from physical health to mental health to social life.
Yeah. Do you think... I wonder what the problem is. You know, if somebody, why would somebody just not involve somebody else in a conversation because they're older? Or why would the might be the last person to be served approached for a menu or something like that for a dinner? Why? What is it in our minds that creates this kind of problem? You know,
I think that what I see are opportunities we have to break down barriers that sometimes occur as we grow older. So there may be issues, or maybe a person has a maybe low hearing or mobility challenges. So when we create events or environments where we are not accommodating to those, sometimes that will automatically prevent someone from engaging or participating. And I think sometimes, too, there's the tendency to experience something maybe with one or two people and then to generalize. And so we need to be really mindful about, really seeking the opportunities and acknowledging all the strengths that we see and that we experience if we take the time.
Yeah. Dr. Kep, you founded and serve as director for the Center for Mental Health and Aging. It's described on your website as a professional and public education company. How'd you get this started, and what do you do?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for asking. So as a geropsychologist working in large medical systems, so from the Atlanta VA healthcare system, Emory, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, I trained at Stanford, I saw repeatedly firsthand that the mental health needs of older adults were often overlooked, untreated. There was a lot of misinformation about what's typical for older adults and not typical as it relates to mental health concerns. So, for example, there's a misconception that depression is normal as we age, and it is not. Depression risk actually decreases with age, because resilience increases, psychological resilience increases as we age. And so what happens, though, is if we think that depression, anxiety, dementia is normal with aging, then we're not going to be identifying it and treating it. And when we don't treat mental health concerns, this also has very severe consequences, like worsening of medical problems, more medications for medical problems, more ER visits, higher risk for dementia disorders, higher risk for suicide, and more family strain and caregiving strain. And when we treat mental health concerns in older adulthood, it actually protects us from these things. And so my sort of personal call to action and mission has been to spread the word about this so that we can identify mental health concerns and get people the care and treatment that they need. And one of the reasons this is so important, too, is that I want to live in a society where we continue to believe that at any age, healing and transformation and growth are possible. I don't want to live in a society where at a certain age we stop growing and transforming and evolving. And that's what ageism wants us to believe, and it's a lie. And it affects every aspect of a person's life. And so this is why, Larry, it's so important that you're addressing the topic today, and that Anne is hosting an event that is, she'll talk about, that is bringing this topic to light, because it affects all of us. And we can all do something about it.
And you have, and thanks for that comment, Dr. Kep. And Anne, you have a free event in Madison next week that focuses on this issue.
Yes, we do. We're super excited. So SAIL is Sharing Active Independent Lives. And we're a nonprofit network of members, people over the age of 55. Who band together, help one another, draw from services and resources, and we also enjoy social connections and activities and lifelong learning. And we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, and as part of that, we are super excited to offer this free event on ageism. The topic itself is in perfect alignment with everything that we have valued since day one, which, as Dr. Kep shared is the contributions, the opportunities, and the growth that together we can make with one another. We age better together. And one thing that SAIL has, as I said from the beginning, we partner with the members. So as staff, it is not a traditional consumer or clinical type of relationship. We partner with the members. And together we accomplish helping people stay and at home, age healthy, safely at home, but most importantly, create connections. And this is our theme this year, connections. And so offering this event helps us connect more widely with the community, not just internally with membership and those we're associated with. The event will include table discussions along with presentations by Dr. Kep and also Sam Wilson, who is with AARP. And the table discussions will be facilitated by several community partners. And these are people in Dane County. We are rich with resources, and we have many aging colleagues, aging services colleagues, who are assisting with this workshop to help facilitate table discussions and where we can hear from the participants. All ages are welcome, and it's really important to register in advance. We have about 50 spaces left, so are hoping, and you can register by clicking on sailtoday.org website.
S-A-I-L?
S-A-I-L-today.org. Or calling 608-230-4321.
And we'll give that again as we move along today. Mm-hmm. Talking today with Dr. Regina Kep, a clinical geropsychologist and the founder and director of Center for Mental Health and Aging based in Atlanta and Georgia. Ann Elbert, executive director of Age Better Incorporated in Madison. I'm Larry Miller for WPR News. Along about 11:45, we'll talk about how voice disorders are treated with a couple of faculty members from the UW Department of Otolaryngology. Then at 12:30, we'll talk about personalized cell therapy treatments for cancer and other diseases. That's a fascinating subject as well. But the fascinating subject we're dealing with right now is ageism with our two guests, Dr. Regina Kep and Ann Elbert. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Got an experience you want to share? I hope you will. Or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Sue in Eau Claire. Sue, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a nurse practitioner with geriatric specialty for many, many years. And I just wanted to make a comment that I think some of the problems with elders not speaking up or you're not being able to really help them mentally is that we don't try to figure out where they're coming from. If we find out what they're really interested in, rather than just offering a simple craft that makes paper door decorations or something like that, that's just below what their capabilities truly are, it'll make a huge difference in getting their involvement. If we find out who they are and what makes them tick, there's all kinds of things that will work. So thank you for taking that.
Sue, thanks for calling. And have you both comment. Ann, start with you.
I think she's absolutely right, the caller. I absolutely believe that. We, for example, when people join our organization, one of the first things we do is a new member visit. And it's an opportunity to meet the person and get to know them and inquire more about what their interests are. But on a day-to-day basis, I think we need to do better with that because there are definitely, we all have passions and they continue regardless of our age. And being able to express that is super important.
Yeah, I would think so. I can think about talking with somebody who's spent 30 years in a particular field of study or work, just to give a talk on it, and maybe teach a class related to it. Yeah,
right.
I think that makes good sense. Dr. Kemp, comments?
Well, I think, Sue, the caller is exactly right. Getting to know the person before you prescribe an activity is important. And just to relate it back to ageism can include paternalizing behavior, assuming you know better for the person than they know for themselves, and treating them like they're incapable or a child. You know, we infantilize older people, and that is a manifestation of ageism. And one way to counter that is to do what Sue was suggesting, is to get to know the person and understand who the person is, what their interests are, what fuels them, what drives them, what would bring them a mission-filled, purpose-filled life, and go with what they want and not what you assume they want.
All good points. I'm wondering, having just gone through some times with my brother, who actually passed away here several months back, but he was an older guy, and in dealing, you know, I went through a lot of ups and downs, actually, dealing with him. And I'm wondering, how should we think differently about aging, especially for those of us who are caregivers for maybe siblings or parents or grandparents? I think I have thoughts from both of you on that. Anne, you want to start?
Yeah, I think that it's important to take the time and to try to focus on the abilities or the ways that you can engage together. And, you know, kind of be creative, be open to being creative with how you might go about that. I think a lot of a member we have who's 104 years old, and she cannot drive. She decided to give up driving. and she has other friends that she'd like to see. It's not good to be, you know, she likes to be with people. And so she ended up having a friend, a handyman that helps her out, organize picking up some friends to come over and visit. So, you know, she really took charge of that. And I think it's really important to, again, not take over necessarily or assume that somebody can't take part in creating an opportunity like that. And so I always kind of refer to it as that person calling the shots, so to speak, you know, being able to organize things or come up with ideas.
Good points. Dr. Kemp, comments?
Well, Larry, first, I'm so sorry for the loss of your brother. And I think caregivers face unique and complex challenges that nobody can really understand until they're in the middle of it. I think it just has so many dilemmas and complexities. You're navigating what's potentially best for your brother and yourself, and there are a lot of competing demands. I'll say, sometimes when we are bearing witness and caregiving we're bearing witness to another person's suffering, it can become very overwhelming for our own lives. And having our own caregivers as a caregiver is key, that we are shoring ourselves up with other supports and resources, because just as the population is aging, so too are the number of caregivers, because as we age, we do become more physically vulnerable, and we do become more vulnerable to medical problems, and we will need care and caregiving. And that's a reality that comes with growing older. And that is not the only reality that comes with growing older. So I would also say there are three other important aspects to growing older, four total. There's the physical, which tends to decline with age. There's psychological, spiritual, and social aspects of growing older as well that can actually evolve and deepen. And so often in society, and for caregivers in particular, the focus is on the physical because it is what is the most pressing concern. And like Anne was talking about, we can also attend to these other parts of our life that we can cultivate and strengthen, which are the psychological resiliencies, friendships, and even our spirituality and what brings us a sense of purpose in the world, even if we're living with a life-altering medical condition or we're caregiving for somebody. And many caregivers I've worked with will say caregiving was the hardest thing that they've ever done, and they would do it all over again, because even though it is filled with a lot of stress and bearing witness to suffering and putting your life, what feels like a life, on hold, it also comes with a deep sense of meaning and purpose for many caregivers. And so if folks are listening who are caregivers, please get support for yourself so you can do the hard and necessary work of caregiving and be clear about your boundaries in the caregiving relationship. And that will change over time and fluctuate. Like you mentioned, Larry, the ups and downs.
Tony in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you all today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Actually, I just wanted to, I agree with all the psychological and emotional and physical barriers and challenges that come with caregiving. I just wanted to touch on the financial part of things. My mom is going to be 98 years old, and I've been very much taking care of her back and forth for more years than I can count now. And none of us were born with golden spoons, and so it's pretty financially draining as a caregiver when you don't have the ability to bring in an income and pad your retirement. And it can actually put some pretty significant financial challenges on yourself, just because I'm trying to get her to keep as much independence as possible. So she does live in not any kind of assisted living or anything, but it is a place for seniors. And but I am back and forth there 7 days a week, and extra meals and extra running, and as much time as I possibly can give between 1 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock is when I have time for myself. And so realistically, just even keeping your vehicle going with that kind of extra pull out of your household, it can be pretty challenging in that direction.
Yeah. Tony, thanks a lot for calling. I'll get comments probably from both. Dr. Kapp, we'll start with you this time. Go ahead.
You are so right about the financial realities and challenges of caregiving. And caregiving can last for years to decades. And also, depending on the illness, some illnesses require more resources than others to provide care for. And it can have tremendous consequence for families financially. I think this is where policy is really important, to like Medicaid and Medicare policies, and making sure we're considering that when we go to the voting polls, what's important to you about policies that will impact caregiving down the road. I'd say we should all be concerned about policies impacting caregiving now and down the road, policies impacting places that people can afford to live when they need assistance or assisted living, personal care homes, room and board homes. I think that's critical when we're talking about caregiving, is what resources are available financially. And because most caregivers work or need to continue working, I think close to 2/3 of caregivers work full time. And so it is an impossible position for caregivers to be in. The more the caregiving needs increase, the less the person can work, because somebody's life is literally in your hands. And so we really need to be thinking about this at a systemic level with policy and protecting people and making sure we have resources to support families.
Yeah. Anne, anything to add there?
Wow, I totally agree. I think that it is very challenging. And we do often refer people to the aging and disability resource centers. They have benefits specialists. Some people aren't aware of maybe some of the programs that are available, but it definitely we need to advocate with the policies. That makes a huge difference for all of us.
And thinking not only of the caregivers, Tony, thanks, and good for you for the work that you've done with your mom. I can feel a little bit what it takes based on my own experiences, but not to the extent that you have. I'm pretty sure of that. I'm wondering, just for the person, the elderly or the older person who is fine and trying to live independently, but financially for that person, it's also a problem. I mean, you're limited. You can be limited if you've retired. You can be quite limited in what you can do. Would you talk about that a little bit, Dr. Kemp?
Sure. Yes. So our opportunities for making money do become more limited. Either physically, we may not be as mobile to participate in the workplace as we once were. And then, of course, ageism. Even if you do want to participate in the workplace, ageism might be a barrier in your finding work. I know many older adults who actually go back to work after retirement for financial reasons and for supplemental insurance to cover what Medicare doesn't cover for them or their family members. And so I think that the financial concerns for older people in general are very important. Also, we're living longer. So the older adulthood for research purposes starts at 65, and really we start it when people become eligible for Social Security. So older adulthood might shift to 67, but right now it's 65, and people can live from 65 to 122. And so that is close to 60 years.
Yeah, you're halfway through life.
Yeah. And so that's a long time to, if you want to work, to be discriminated against at work, to be overlooked for positions, or if you're not able to work or are of retirement age and want to enjoy other aspects of your life beyond work, then maybe you're very limited in the range that you have access to outside of your community or even with driving, as the caller, Tony, was talking about.
Yeah, it's... I'm trying to. Well, I don't think I'm going to make it to 120. I hope I live a long time, but I'm pretty sure I probably won't make it that long. But here's me. I've got a pretty good retirement program. I work for the state. One of the things we did as state workers, we took a little less salary money and put more money, more of our intention into retirement programs. So through life, you don't make quite as much, but then at the end of life, you have a lot better. And so I feel really, really lucky to be where I am in my situation. But I full know well that so many people are not in that kind of situation, Anne.
I agree. I think... fortunately, we do live in, I can speak to Dane County in this community, a wonderful community with many resources. It's really important for all of us to be aware of what's out there and to take part. And then if we're able to support some of these resources, that can help ease some of that financial stress, thinking about things like transportation and things that volunteers can help with. It goes back to being, an advocate in terms of policy, all of that, but also really living in community, whether it is you as a person drawing on some of the resources, such as volunteer support, or you are providing it and or funding. We are in this together, and this is an unprecedented time where we have the amount or the number of people growing older and maybe with children who are retired, for example.
Mark in Wausau has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Larry. I have a personal experience. My mother got Alzheimer's. She's passed away since. But my wife and I moved up in 2011 to Wausau to take care of her. In the process, we got a hold of a book that's utterly fantastic, ties in excellently with what everybody's been saying. I'm wondering if all of you have heard of it. It's called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Dementia Ward. A local writer wrote it because he started working at our local health facility. And it's just fantastic. He just showed the value of getting to know even people with Alzheimer's, their background, and learning to work with them and how much better it was when you did that.
Oh.
I've not heard of that. Thank you.
Dr. Kemp, have you heard? A funny thing happened on the way to the dementia ward.
I also haven't heard of it, but I'm going to check it out.
I am too.
But the message that Mark shared, which is to really get to know the person, is key. And I couldn't agree more, because so often when people are living with conditions like Alzheimer's disease, we look only at the illness, and it's hard to see the person who's covered or shrouded by the illness. And Mark's reminder to look for the person and look and be curious about what they are interested in, who they are, their family life, what inspired them, and find ways to incorporate that into their world is really key. So I thank you, Mark, for reminding us of that message.
Yeah, thanks very much, Mark. I want to go back to the event that's coming up for those tuning in late. Maybe you've got a free event in Madison next week. It's focused on this issue. And tell us about it.
Okay. The name of the event is Flip the Script on Aging. And it's happening on Wednesday, October 22nd at 1:30, from 1:30 to 4 p.m. at Madison Marriott West. And to register, you can call 608-230-4321 or click on sailtoday.org, sailtoday.org on our website. We have some spaces left. We have limited space left, so we encourage people to register. We ask you to please register in advance. And we look forward to a very dynamic presentation and wonderful discussions.
And Dr. Kemp, you're going to be talking. Tell us what you're going to be speaking about at the event.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about how to shift your mindset to be more pro-aging and less ageist. And so we'll be talking a little bit about what we talked about today, as well as what we can do about ageism when we see it happening, like to just draw our attention to an awareness to ageist thoughts. So if somebody says something that's ageist, or you yourself think something that's ageist, to drawing awareness to it, to being open to changing it and to challenging it. And so we'll talk about the impact of ageism on physical health and mental health, like we touched on here. We'll talk about what older adulthood brings. So often when we talk about aging, we talk about negative aspects of aging, and there are so many positive aspects of aging. Like older adults are, per research, better problem solvers. We have a greater sense of self-compassion. We have more wisdom, a better sense of emotion regulation, and so looking at one thing I say is when we only focus on what is wrong, we miss what is strong. And so, yes, while we do have physical changes that come, we do become more medically vulnerable. That is a reality of growing older. We also become psychologically and spiritually and socially stronger. And so focusing also on cultivating what is strong and what we can evolve with is what we'll be talking about as well.
It sounds absolutely great, and you two have the kind of energy and enthusiasm that brings out that makes me want to attend for sure. I want to go back to that book that was mentioned. The title of it is "A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward," and it's subtitled "A Memoir of a Male CNA." So there's that as well. So, all right, you want to hear some more from Ann and from Dr. Kapp? I hope you'll sign up for this event. Flip the Script on Aging, right?
Right.
Script on Aging, and it's coming up October 22nd. And go to sailtoday.org, and you're going to find out how to register. And you need to register.
Yes,
right?
Yes, we need you to register.
But it's a free event.
It is free, yeah, definitely.
But I understand why you would need to register.
Yes.
For sure. Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. It's been very instructive to me, and I think to our listeners as well, and really appreciate not only being with us today, but the work that you do, because it's very important work, and I'm glad you're keeping it up. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Dr. Regina Kapp is a clinical geropsychologist and the founder and director of the Center for Mental Health and Aging in Atlanta, Georgia. Ann Elbert is executive director of Age Better Incorporated, located in Madison. It's great to have both of them with us. And you know what? We'll probably be doing this topic again down the road. I'm pretty sure we will. Up next, we're going to talk about voice disorders and how they are treated with two faculty members in the Department of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.